Time for the Asri report. We welcome on to the airwaves of Radio Islam, the program director at Asri, Angela Fik. Angela, assalamu alaikum and good morning and welcome to the program.
Alaikum assalam to you and to the listeners.
The long journey of the Zondo Commission of Inquiry into State Capture concluded this week when the Chief Justice handed the final volumes over to the President Ramaphosa at the Union Building. So now, what next?
Well, that is all up to President Ramaphosa, because his office has suggested that he needs until October to give a comprehensive response to the multi-volume report. But presumably, he will have to make the recommendations on what his office and the executive will do in relation to the very many recommendations given. There are specific recommendations around what he is expected to do, particularly around the appointments to cabinet and to senior posts. The Zondo Commission suggests reform around that to prevent the cronyism and corrupt networks from developing that we saw under the Zuma administration. But there are also specific issues around the prosecuting of individuals, that the National Prosecuting Authority has to follow up on, the priority crimes investigation units has to follow up on that, several commercial crimes that have to be followed, and people that have to be charged, entire entities. There's also stuff around money that has to be recouped, that people have wasted and spent. Then there is the big matter of the prominent issue of the return of the Gupta brothers, who've been arrested in the UAE, and then if they'll be repatriated to South Africa, and if and when they'll be charged. And then there are significant issues around reform of the electoral process, reform of the entire edifice, the structure of the executive arm of government and how it gets to be established. And these are all issues that the President's office will have to respond to, and that various other arms of government will then also be able to respond to, including Parliament, and the various authorities tasked with keeping law and order.
Yeah, so that is quite a lengthy process, and I think people need to be aware of that so that they don't expect immediate results. There's obviously processes that need to be followed, and that has been the case already where there's been the lengthy process through the compiling of the report. Now, moving on, Angelo, Cyril Ramaphosa is criticized in the report for his actions and inactions. What are the main challenges that the head of state faces, and what is the report sketch of the man and the office suggests about politics, power, and corruption?
So there's an entire section in which is headed, "What did he know and when did he know it?" Which questions the version of events that Mr. Ramaphosa gave as president of the country and former deputy president, as president of the ANC. His suggestion in his testimony was that he had intervened at the appropriate location and times and done all he could. And he mentioned the issue of the appointment of Des van Rooyen as finance minister that he objected to, and two other incidents that he sort of stood up and put his foot down and said, up to here and no further. But the Zondo Commission found that this was not entirely convincing because there had been a longer period of reports in the public media that certainly should have warranted some kind of response from Mr. Ramaphosa as deputy president of the country. There were newspaper reports as early as 2010 and 2011 about the awkward relationship between the Guptas and the ANC and government. There's also Mr. Fikile Mbalula's report to the ANC NEC of concerns. And then there are concerns that the Zondo Commission had with the way in which the ANC responded as a party to its own members raising these issues. The report suggests that on the basis of the evidence, it looked at it as if the ANC merely took in these allegations and these complaints and did nothing about them and did very little to protect its own members who were suggesting that they were being targeted. And so there are all sorts of concerns around the way in which the political party responded and Mr. Ramaphosa's account of that response, and then the way in which he responded as an individual, as deputy president of the country, and what was known, because he cannot deny knowledge, given that it was all over the newspapers, the television stations, the radio stations, and the hard work that very specific journalists did across that period couldn't be denied. But we've seen this not just in South Africa, but across the world, where politicians deny media reports, because they suggest media reports are slightly less substantial. We've even had a minister of government in this country represented in court, suggesting that photographs of Omar al-Bashir's aircraft leaving South Africa wasn't enough evidence to indicate in that court process that government had let him go. And so these kinds of games that politicians play about what they know and what is knowable, and contrasting that with what the public knows, is a phenomenon of contemporary politics across the world. But it's something that we really have to combat and change. And so Mr. Ramaphosa has individual challenges, and it's going to be, it looks like a very harsh and difficult winter for him, because in addition to this state capture report, he also has the Arthur Fraser matter, the Palapala matter, and the report is quite harsh about the appointments that he made as president of the country after he took over in February 2018. Not being able to, or the commission wasn't clear why he would reappoint people like Mr. Fraser to senior positions, given the criminal investigations that had been underway and stopped during his time in office under President Zuma. And so there are all sorts of questions about his judgment and who exactly does the appointment. And as head of the procurement committee or the deployment committee in the ANC, and in his role as deputy president, heading up several aspects of business's relationship with government and the SOEs, it's not credible. The report seems to suggest that he knew as little as he suggests he did.
Interesting. Moving on now, Jacob Zuma and his son Duduzane, Arthur Fraser, Lucky Montana, and the infamous Gupta brothers, and their many local associates, among several others, also portrayed in very unflattering terms. And there's strong and specific recommendations for the Criminal Prosecution Authority to follow up. What should South Africans expect to happen next?
So what's likely to happen next is that not only the president, but also the various national prosecuting authorities, you know, lawyers will have to look at the report and begin to think of ways in which they can mount cases. So we heard from Advocate Shamila Batoi last year, this is not a simple process. Just because it feels to an outsider, to the legal process, that somebody should be charged doesn't mean that a case is mountable, because investigations have to find credible evidence that will stand up in court, a slew of witnesses, a paper trail, and then a judgment will have to be made about the likely success of a particular prosecutorial process before it can be engaged in. There are, it feels like, hundreds of people that are implicated in these actions, possibly thousands. And so the question will have to become who, one, has to be charged. Is there a way of doing plea bargaining to downscale the costs of prosecutions? And what will be the cost to the person who is engaging in that kind of plea bargaining to reduce possible custodial sentences? To engage for the prosecuting authorities, but all sorts of agencies in the South African state that do criminal investigations have themselves damaged by this state capture process. And so the question is also of capacity. And this is something that Shamila Batoi hinted at last year when she indicated that several of these kinds of cases are prominent, but people have to be patient because they take long, and it's also likely that those who are charged are, you know, going to object to their charging by going through several legal challenges ahead of the actual process of appearing in court. We've seen that already happening with people trying to take the commission to court for about having their names raised in other people's testimony. And so there's a very long road ahead still. We completed the chapter of the initial investigation through the commission, and now it's up to the existing structures in this state to begin to kick in, either through investigation and then following that charging. And then I think many of these authorities are also waiting on the October response from the president himself about what the executive's take will be on the way forward.
Yes. There are also recommendations for electoral reform, including the direct election of the president by voters rather than by parties in parliament and a permanent anti-corruption commission. How sound are these recommendations for bringing about less corruption?
So this, I think, is the sneaky issue or the problematic issue in this report. There are suggestions by the commission that, one, the president should be elected directly. But there is no citation of research or even philosophical and political debate about this, nor is there any kind of comparison of existing presidential systems and whether or not they actually result in corruption that is imagined. And there's a bit of magical thinking in the section of the report. So I'm with the philosopher, sociologist, and economist Samir Amin, who in one of his books, Liberal Virus, was quite scathing of the presidential system coming out of the United States. He argued that what it does is it simply, in its 18th century invention, replaced the monarch with a monarchical president. And we've seen the results of that in several American elections, the worst of which was the election of Donald Trump. The report also seems to suggest that it was a surprise that Mr. Trump could be elected under this system and that this was some aberration. But that's not actually what the history of American elections, as researchers have done, their findings have indicated. The election of, among others, George W. Bush Jr. in 2000 over Al Gore was one of the skewing of that system. And so the question is, will this direct election of a head of state necessarily put the parties on hold, and will it take away? No. In fact, we've seen in contemporary France under Emmanuel Macron that a presidential system can lead to a greater concentration of power in an individual. What Samin argues also is that what it reduces the political contest to is one of personality. So it is whether candidate A speaks better than candidate B, and the party agendas that really should go with this, as in representative democracy, is curtailed, because what you end up with is parties merely settling in the middle to a centrist consensus, and what you then sit with is that very specific sectoral interests are represented, because those the way in which corporations and business then come to dominate politics is precisely to create these individuals like Hollywood stars, people who can, or in some cases even Bollywood villains, people who can be liked or disliked, people who can be sold to electorates, rather than people who represent entire sections or movements of the society. And that, I think, is one of the issues that we have to bear in mind. The second issue is, of course, reform of election processes. Yes, absolutely. South Africa is in need of electoral reform. But there are varieties of other scenarios that this report from the Commission didn't consider. So, you know, changing the role of the head of state is one thing, but the corruption in the society goes down through to the municipal level. We know that the face of corruption for ordinary South Africans isn't necessarily that large, sort of the higher levels of big contracts involving billions and people whose names we've mentioned in this interaction. It's when people go and their toilets don't flush, or the electricity is not delivered, or they can't get their municipal bills sorted, or there's a crime that's happened in their community and the police are not able to respond because there isn't a vehicle. That's the face of experience of ordinary people in South Africa, the corruption. And so it's important that we take on board the Zondo Commission's suggestions and recommendations, but that we also, as South Africans, challenge them and challenge them from the position that they need to be informed by research and scholarship, not just by a kind of commission thinking about this process without the context of historical example, and that they also should benefit ordinary South Africans by deepening democracy rather than by turning us into a new kind of monarchy where the head of state, even if elected, is able to play this executive role and has very little accountability through a party system. And this reform also says very little about how individuals, in the wake of current electoral reform, sitting in the National Assembly, are likely to be able to play a role in holding the president accountable. So, yes, lofty ideals, The Permanent Anti-Corruption Commission, that just sounds like a total disaster, because unless we're going to stop paying the existing structures and people who are meant to do oversight and accountability, parliamentarians in their committees, the various authorities, Chapter 9 organizations, we're simply creating another parallel structure in addition to existing structures that we're already paying for, and we could spend that money far more productively. So, again, a good idea in terms of a permanent anti-corruption commission, but the question is, what about existing dysfunctioning methods that we already pay for? Do we abolish them? Do we abandon them? And in which case, why do we then have as many parliamentarians as we do, and why does Parliament sit for as long as it does? So again, we have to take this on seriously. It makes specific suggestions, but I think it's important for civil society and civic actors, as well as citizens in South Africa, matters in their fora, in their, you know, clubs, in their various ways of communing, in order to come to some form of understanding, and then to represent their takes on the Zondo Commission's recommendations by making these, you know, these understandings and their contestations visible to Parliament and the Presidency by writing to these authorities and suggesting, yes, this is a nice suggestion, but this is why we think it should or shouldn't work in a particular way. We are, after all, democracy, and democracy is about participation. This shouldn't just be President Ramaphosa and Chief Justice Zondo's understanding. It should be informed by the wills and desires of all 60 million South Africans.
Certainly, as you indicate, you know, that there's so much more to just making alternate suggestions. Thank you very much for your time. Your time appreciated. Angelo, have a lovely day.
Shukran.
That is Angelo with the weekly edition of the Asri Report.